Accession number 30649, Mr. Ted Hill, Real 10. So what's the next stage then? You're an auxiliary watchkeeper. You know, you can do...
Yeah, and you tend to get... You do get moved around a bit, but you're not as quickly as you were under training or when you're doing the AWK. There was a set time for each thing, which was about a month. But you might be put on... I think I was on turbo generators for quite a long time, about 6 months.
And what goes wrong with turbo generators then? Or does nothing go wrong?
You know? Not a lot, no. You could lose oil pressure sometimes, which was serious. I mean, you had to do something very quick about it. You've got a turbine doing 6,000 RPM geared down to drive a dynamo. So, you know, it has to be watched all the time. That's why you're there. That's why you're called watchkeepers, because you're watching things. You know. And after that, about, I forget when it was, but it was in 1952, quite a long while before we came home, must have been 6 or 8 months before we came home, I had to go to the regulating Chief Zoga's office for something, and it was something about a watch or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was just trivial stuff. But I had to ask him something. And while he was there, he was talking to another chief. And he was saying, well, we're short of a fresh water tank if he's going. Someone was going home. Now, a fresh water tank is a prime job. There's only two of you, and we work watch and watch about, two of you, 24 on, 24 off, you know.
Now, this is fresh water for drinking, not for...
Not for the boilers.
Yeah. So tell me what the duties are on the fresh water tank. Well, I mean, have you got an evaporator as well?
No.
How does it work then?
Well, you tell them... If an evaporator's... evaporating water for the fresh water tanks, you put it into what tank you want. They pump it into a line and then it becomes yours and you divert it to whatever fresh water tank, because there's a big one forward and a big one aft, and that's where the two pumps are situated, and you divert it wherever you want it. You test the water. And the tiffy in charge measures out the amount of chlorine to go into the tank each night. And he has to, you have to tell him, well, look, there's 15 and a half tons in the forward tank and 20 in the after tank. And he measures out the amount of chloride for that amount of water. And he gives it to you and you go and put it in the tanks. This is at sea. One of the really consistent jobs was getting the fresh water pump forward every night. It used to lose suction. And the forward fresh water pump supplied the forward end of the ship and all the bridge structure, where there was some officers' cabins were in that had sinks and hot and cold water and all that. Well, this forward pump used to lose suction every night. And during the Korean War, we did dawn action stations. Before daylight, we used to go to action stations, the whole ship. The fresh water tanky, good job as it was, I had to, if I was on duty, I had to get up at... was it half an hour before dawn action stations and go down and prime the forward pump, because it was always running but not pumping. I used to have to go down, prime it so it was pumping, and wait until it had filled up the tank. On the top of the bridge on the flag deck was a fresh water tank that held about 50 gallons. And when I'd primed the pump, and you could see it was pumping, I used to wait. And when it filled this tank, it would cut out. And as the water was used, it would cut in and out all day until night time. And it always lost suction at night for some reason. There was a famous ERA on there whose name was Fuck the Pump. And it was his job to try and fix. And he worked for days and weeks and all that on this pump. He never, ever sorted it. But he used to curse it, which was how he got his nickname. So it never did get sorted out. But I was fresh water tanky. My opposite number was a bloke called John Wills.
He was the other one.
I'll talk to you about it. He was and he was senior to me. He was a leading hand. He'd come off the Admiral's staff by then. He was on the Admiral's staff driving the Admiral's barge, the engineer on the Admiral's barge, and he was a leading hand. So he was quite a senior. So he came back onto the ship and walked straight into the fresh water tankies, which was one of the best jobs in our department. And it came about, the chief stoker joined the Navy with Willie's brother. So he made him fresh water tanky. But we worked together quite right until the ship came home.
What was he like then? I mean, obviously you know him now, but I mean, what was he like then?
He was good, good mate. He was well spoken. He was better spoken than most of the blokes on the mess deck. But he was a good bloke to work with. I mean, he was very fair. He didn't take advantage of the fact that he was a leading hand and I was a stoker mechanic, although I was qualified to be a leading hand, but it was a case of waiting. But while I was fresh water tanky, I was made up to acting leading hand, and I've got it on here. Yeah, June 52. Oh no, April 52.
Well, that's very early then.
Yeah.
That's only 7 months after, you know.
1st of April, well, I was on this accelerated advancement by then. I was made up acting LSM local. I was a...
So that's leading...
Leading stoker mechanic. And it was local. And that was because they were short of leading hands. The engineer commander could make me up. I had to see the captain and all that go through the usual routine. Because the captain did all the promotions. You had to go in front of him without taking your hat off. The difference is if you take your hat off, you're a defaulter. You know, you're in trouble. If you keep your hat on and salute him, you're there for other reasons. And I was there to be made acting LSM local. And I only had it for 2 months, April and all of May. Then I relinquished it. I was a stoker mechanic again for June. And at the end of June, the 27th of June, I was made acting LSM local again until the 30th of November. Oh, no.
Doesn't matter too much. We get the... I mean...
I was... Till November.
What did it mean being acting leading stoker mechanic? I mean, did it make much difference?
Oh, yeah. You were in a position of authority then, and you could be put in charge of a mess with 20 other blokes on it, which I wasn't. because I was on a mess already, had two leading hands on it.
Now, what about this accelerated promotion business then?
Well, I was on it.
When did
then.
That start?
Now,
what did it mean then?
Well, it meant lots of promotions go on time. You know, you pass your... If you're a stoker mechanic, you do so long as a stoker mechanic before you do... They let you do the auxiliary watchkeeping certificate. Unless you've been selected for accelerated advancement. This can happen when you're in training or when you join your first ships. Well, it didn't happen to me in training. It happened to me on my first ship, like the Belfast. Because the other ships I'd only been on for a few weeks.
Do you know why they picked you for that?
Well, because I was competent, I would assume.
Because you were doing
well. Well, I was, yeah. And I don't know when it started, really.
Doesn't matter too much.
Oh, here we are. July 15, 1951, when I passed the educational test. That's got a red tick. Awarded the AWK, that's got a red tick. Passed professionally for LSM, basic date, 7th of July 1952. That's got a red tick. So that's the accelerated advancement bit.
Now, any characters on the ship you want to talk to us about? I mean, firstly, perhaps the captain. You know, we haven't really mentioned people like that. I mean, who was captain when you got on? You know, on
when I first went on, it was Captain La Measure.
La Measure, not La.
No, it was spelt L-E, but pronounced La. They tell me, his family told me, because I met his daughter last year, and I asked her. They pronounce it La because it's a Channel Islands name. No one spells his name correctly, but it's Measure, M-E... S-U-R-I-E-R, and it's pronounced Measurer, not Missouria, Missouri, whatever. People always leave the I out, even in books, they've missed the I. He was related to the actor in Dad's Army.
Now, what was he like?
He was a friendly bloke. I mean, he was God, really. On the ship, he was, you know, he was the arbiter of everything on the ship. He was the law. If you did something wrong and finished up in front of him, he could punish you by putting you in jail. But in the old days, probably pre-war, captains were very distant. But this was in the 50s, and they were gradually... You know, the distance was being taken out of it between the officers and the men. And he used to wander around the ship. If he was going up the bridge, he always took his hat off. And when he went past, you could acknowledge him. You didn't salute him and stand at attention or anything, because he had his hat off and he did that, so you didn't have to. You know, he was that sort of bloke. And he would stop and talk to you. I mean, he talked to us junior stokers when we first went on board, because they'd never had them before. We were, you know, a rare species. But he was on there, I don't know, for about 6 months. And he wasn't much of a character. You know, he was a nice captain. Good captain, very popular captain. The next one who took over from him was Captain Sir Aubrey Sinclair Ford, Bart. Quickly known to the lads as Strawberry, Old Strawberry.
Why?
Well, Sir Aubrey Sinclair Ford.
Yes, I can see that. Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, the captain, like, his pre- predecessor, La Measure, Captain La Measure, he was known as the old man. You know, I saw the old man crossing the boat deck, and people would know you're talking about the captain. But they called him Strawberry. And he was a little tubby bloke, quite famous in the Navy as being the best ship handler they had. And he was captain, during the war, he was captain of HMS Kipling, which was one of Mountbatten's flotilla of destroyers. And when the Kelly, which was Mountbatten's ship, was sunk in the Mediterranean off Crete, Aubrey and the Kipling rescued him. And the tale goes that Mountbatten tried to take over the ship, and Aubrey wouldn't have it because he was captain of the ship. Mountbatten was a full captain, a four-ring captain, and old Strawberry was a lieutenant commander, but captain of the ship. And the only people who could remove him from his ship was the Lords of the Admiralty, not Mountbatten. And they reckon Mountbatten never ever forgot that, because at the end of his career, Mountbatten was very high in the Admiralty. And old Strawberry, although he was the best ship handler in the Navy and recognised as such, he made Commodore his last appointment, and then he reverted to Captain to retire, because Commodore's a temporary rank. He never made Admiral, which everybody who knew him, who ever served with him, reckoned he should have done, you know. But Mountbatten...
Well, what was he like, Strawberry? Let's call him Strawberry.
Oh, he used to chat to the lads. I mean, if he was down aft to get to the bridge, he used to walk across the boat deck, and it would be full of stokers. That was our recreation space. And he used to take his hat off. Well, he used to carry it under his arm. So there was no, you know, no military performance. And he used to stop and talk to the lads, and he used to say, "I like my Stokey boys." You know, things like this. And he was very fair. Although, I mean, the Belfast was a happy ship, but there was lots of people who used to get into trouble. Now, usually that denotes an unhappy ship, but it didn't. It was just the conditions of the Korean War, going out for 6 weeks and coming in for two, and half the blokes who went ashore didn't come back until the next day, and things like this. But it was still a happy ship, and he was a very good captain. He, you know, the blokes, everybody loved him. They really did.
Any other big characters on the ship, or senior officers, or characters, either way, whichever comes to your mind?
Well, we had a bloke on the Stoker's mess deck, because when the Korean War started, we had a few months to go to the end of the 48-50 commission, and we came home to change the ship's company.
Now, when was that?
That was October 1950. It was a very fast turnaround. We changed the ship's company in 17 days and were off back to the Far East. And they'd called up some reserves for the Korean War. And this old fella came on the Stoker's mess deck, and he looked so old. He'd retired as a chief petty officer stoker. He'd bought a calf at Abridge, which is just down the road from here, and he'd got this calf going. He'd only going for about 9 months, and they recalled him for the Korean War because he was still on the first reserve, although he'd gone out on a pension, and he didn't want to come back. And he didn't come back, so they went and fetched him. And that was his first demotion. When they got him in Chatham Barracks, they knocked him down to a petty officer. You know, that was a charge. And he just would not do anything. And when the Belfast came in, he came on with the new ship's company. And he was a stoker mechanic. Now, you couldn't go lower than a stoker mechanic, but he'd gone from a chief to a PO to a leading hand down to a stoker mechanic. And on the ship, no one could do anything with him. He used to come off watch in his old overalls with a sweat rag round his neck. And he used to say, "I think I'll go up the bridge, get a bit of fresh air." And he used to go up onto the bridge. In those days, was an open bridge. And he used to walk on the bridge and say, "Well, what's going on up here then?" or something like that. And the officer of the watch, and sometimes old Strawberry would go, "Spare, get that man off of here." And old Peggy O'Neill, his name was.
Peggy O'Neill.
His name was O'Neill, and he was, of course, called Peggy. And it carried on. I mean, when we got out to the Far East and went into white uniforms, I always remember the first run ashore. I think we got to Singapore or Hong Kong, one of the other.
This is on your way back?
On the way back to Korea. The rig of the day to go ashore was half whites. That was a white uniform, but no top and collar. It was just a white front and white trousers and shoes. If you went ashore in the evening, you had to wear a full white suit, but we were going at lunchtime. And old Peggy marched out the stoker's mess deck in his half whites, and he had red braces on. And he fell in, and there was this poor little sub-lieutenant, not long ago must have been a midshipman, and he got to Peggy in his red braces, and he said, "What's all this?" And Peggy said, "Well, what do you mean, sir?" He said, "Well, your red braces." And Peggy O'Neill said, "Well, it's this uniform they issued me. If I take them off, my trousers will fall down." But they hiked him out. The RPO, regulating petty officer, which was one of the ship's policemen, took him back to the mess and said, "You know, unless you do dress, you're not going ashore." But he used to do things like that all the time. They just couldn't do anything with him. And in the end, they gave up. But they kept him on the ship. He still had to do his time, which was... He was on it for the rest of the commission for 2 years.
It's a long time.
Well, yeah, but all of us, as they called the reserves up, they added time to our time. Like my 12 years became 13 and a half or 14 or something. But after the war finished, that was worked off. I mean, I never had to serve the extra time. It was worked off over a period of about 3 years. But lots of people were held in for a little bit of extra time because of the Korean War. And there was a lot of reservists on there.
How many of the crew changed? What proportion were like you and stayed on?
Well, there was about 24 stokers who had come out with me midway in the commission, in the previous commission. We just had a week's leave in that 17 days and went back out with it.
Now, any other characters or officers that come to mind that you want to tell us about?
Oh, Dolly Gray, one of the gunnery officers. The actual gunnery officer on there was a lieutenant commander, but Dolly Gray was number two. He was a lieutenant. And he wasn't a character as such. I mean, because his name was Gray, the boys labelled him, his nickname was Dolly Gray, which they never ever called it to his face, except in Sasebo. I always remember, because I was on the boat this time, the Americans ran Liberty boats, and they were great big landing craft that held about 200 people. And they used to pick us all up and bring us back to the ship. And we came back one night, and they've all been in the canteen drinking for blinking hours, we all had. And as we came up to the ship, old Dolly Gray was the officer of the watch, and he's standing on the quarter deck with his telescope under his arm, and he had a cap. Now, most naval officers, they bend the cap around a bit to make it look something, but not Dolly Gray. His was absolutely flat. And he's standing there on the quarter deck, and someone started singing Hello Dolly. And in the end, the whole boat was singing. As it came up to the ship, we were all singing Dolly. And he waved, Dolly Gray shouted to the coxswain, which was an American bloke, take them round, which means take them round the ship, let them quieten down. So we went round the ship. And as we pulled away, they started singing, goodbye, Dolly. Goodbye, Dolly, we must leave you. And when we came back, the same thing happened again, you know, hello, Dolly. And he waved us through about four times. And on the fifth time, this American coxswain, who was an American petty officer, as it was coming alongside, we were all singing Dolly again. And he waved us around. And this American coxswain said, you deal with them when you get them on board. He said, I've finished with this game. And he came alongside and we all piled out. But he was a bit of a character in that respect, you know.
Any others? Or any you know, lesser ranks?
Well, yeah, there was a couple of Marines who used to make for humorous postcards of various activities on the ship, like lunchtime would be depicted of about 50 chimpanzees swinging from the hammock bars, and they always put it as the stoker's mess deck at lunch.
So they just set up these, they do take the photographs themselves?
Yeah. Well, no, they used to draw them and then photograph them. And they were quite very popular. Well, I've got some somewhere, but I couldn't lay my hands on quick. But they used to produce them sort of one a week, these things. Like,
and sell them to the members of the ship?
Oh, yeah. When we went to Curie, which was an Australian base, they did one of a couple of Australian military policemen talking to a couple of British sailors who had bags full of stuff all coming out, and they were saying, rabbits blue, we have the same problem in Australia with rabbits. Well, when we bought presents to bring home, they were called them rabbits. I don't know why or where the name came from, but anything you bought to bring home for your mum or your brothers and sisters was called rabbits. And they had bags full of rabbits that these Australians were saying, rabbits blue, we have the same trouble in Aussie. But